Well, everyone, and welcome back to the Dog Show Drive with Wayne and Will. I'm Wayne Cavanaugh.
And I'm Will Alexander.
Yes, you are, young William. We have a good show for you this week. We hope you're tuned in and listening on your drive to the shows. We're going to talk about the value of a good steward and what it's like to run a ring as a judge and steward. Also, a lot of new breeds these days. We'll catch up on the numbers and the data. All that and more on the Dog Show Drive.
I'm born to run down rocky cliffs. Give me grace, bury my sins. Shattered glass and black holes can't hold me back from where I need to go. Oh, oh, oh,
oh, oh. Well, good morning, young William. It appears that it's a bit earlier than it is where you are than where I am.
Yes, it is quite early, but you know what? This is worth it. The drive to the dog show has to happen. So
yeah, that's true. Yeah.
We had to cast this pod this morning
at
5 a.m.
I have to laugh whenever we say, are you ready to cast a pod in our little text and stuff? I think it's our new catchphrase. We're going to cast a pod.
You started. I'm like, what? First of all, we're going fishing. What are we doing? What?
We can't help ourselves. Anyway, you were judging this weekend.
I was judging this weekend.
And now you're out in BC, right?
Out in BC, my boys.
Americans, that's British Columbia, which is in a country named Canada, which is a little north. Actually, just south of where I am, north. Where you're
We're in a country called Canada.
Yeah.
Where it was a barren wasteland.
Yes, where everyone plays hockey.
Yeah.
Everyone. And wears red plaid flannel.
Yeah.
All the time. Yeah. Anyway.
The igloos don't last. The igloos are seasonal in BC. They don't last.
It is one of my favorite places in the world. It's just beautiful in BC.
It is. Truly is beautiful.
I absolutely.
We've been to Stanley Park. We've done hikes. What we did the other day, we went and saw Raiders in the Lost Ark on the big screen in a classic theater. It was so fun.
Cool. Oh, that
Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yeah. I love that area. I really do.
It was a lot of fun.
Vancouver Island too. I just love that whole part of it.
And we went whale watching, saw a humpback and a pod of orcas.
Did you really? Yep. Wow. I've never done that.
And it was a lot of fun. Yeah. Liam had a bit of seasickness the first half hour, and we gave him some Gravol, and he slept for a while and came back to life perfect.
I do have a little seasickness issue from time to time, but I could give it up for the whales. Anyway, how was your show?
The show, they do an excellent job out here, the Pacific Kennel Club and the BC Sporting Dog Club. It was a lot of fun. We had a lot of good judges here. There was Ainsley Mills and Ashley Reed from Australia, and Michael Faulkner was here, Raymond Urich was here. I saw Yvonne Savard. It was a lot of fun. We went Diane Fass. It was fun. We had a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, it's my third permit. Fourth permit assignment. And I can't tell you how important it is to have a good ring steward. You know, you have to have a ring steward that keeps you on time and keeps you somewhat organized. Because if you're doing everything yourself, you get a little flustered because you start worrying about things like missing classes. I'm going to come out and tell you what I did. I judged a sporting dog specialty, and it was in conjunction with the all breed specialty. And my Labradors came in. I don't know, there's about 12 or 15 champion dogs. And I sat and watched them and checked them in coming in. But I was still, we had had a few screw ups earlier on where I had to shuffle and get myself back on time. And, I gave a dog the breed, and I went on to go group third. And it wasn't in the catalog, Wayne.
Oh, yeah. Well, welcome to judging.
I didn't realize. And a friend of mine calls me. Well, I said, well, what happened in the group? He told me the placement, but we have a problem. I said, well, what's the problem? The one dog that you put up and it placed in the group, it wasn't entering the specialty. I'm like, oh. I said, how did that?
The Springsteen and the Aubrey were the same day, so they probably same thought day. They entered them both and did.
Right, right. And it was a handler. So, you know, they don't make mistakes. We don't make mistakes.
Right. Couldn't they just give a super $30 and call it a day?
All right, Jamie.
Yeah, we've had work for the Forsythes. This is before computers, right? You know, there was
exactly. But you know, and someone was like, it was. I did have a somewhat inexperienced steward, and we got through it. But ultimately, it's my responsibility, and I messed up. So, yeah.
You know, you won't do it again, Will.
No, CKC is probably going to make me walk up to the tundra and back, and buy for a few days on just whale blubber and come on back.
Get some
if I learned anything of my experience up there, you know, next time I'll check the number. No, I'm just kidding.
Well, I don't know. The penicillin to the to wherever the Malamutes did in the Siberias. I don't know what it was. Anyway, I have to. It's important. And stewards just give it up, man. They're just so important. And they give up so much time, and they give up they travel. It's really amazing that we can get these people to do these jobs.
Oh, no question.
But it's also hard.
They were lovely. My steward was lovely to talk to, and, you know, I could tell they were inexperienced. And maybe I should have been on the ball more, but I was getting, you know, I had classes. I had 20-odd duck tours. I had like pretty good-sized classes, and I was trying to concentrate.
That's the key, Will, concentrate, because this is when you judge when I judge in Ireland, they give me an all breed judge as a steward. I don't touch a ribbon or a book or a pen. It's all done for you. You can focus on the dogs. I think that is so important, because we are so damn hung up on all these rules and ribbons, and for the right reason, I guess. And all these triplicate mimeograph archaic things we have to fill out, as I've mentioned a million times. It's hard to get in the rhythm of judging when you're spending all day marking your book. And, you know, when they say you've got 2 minutes to dog, whatever, well, 30 seconds of that is going to be marking the damn book. And in other countries, when they give you a steward who does all that, you can focus 100% of the time on the dogs, and you can go from class to class with rhythm. You don't have to stop, fill out paperwork, turn around, come back. It is a mental process, and it's understandable that these things are going to happen. And stewards can't always be experienced, just like judges. You know, they're going to start off new too. I've had stewards say to me, "Hey, this is my first time. You know, work with me." That's great. I've also had stewards that were so good that you couldn't make a mistake if you tried.
And that's in my previous few times. I've had some amazing stewards that have just been there for me for everything. I'd ask them a question, and they'd know right away what I had to do. And
right.
But you know, ultimately it's my fault and my responsibility, and I'm taking it as a lesson learned. You know, I'm still young in my judging career, so I will chalk that up to a lesson learned, and I will take my book and wander out there and check numbers and
and
all those things I'm supposed to do. Yeah,
you have to do it. It's one of those things that maybe shouldn't be done by the judge, but in this country that's the way it has to be, and you know. That's the way it goes. I had Fred Heyer, who's a judge, a really good guy from here. Well, not from here, from Kalamazoo. I'm up in Traverse City still. And it was his club, and he stewarded for me. And this is a guy who has a couple groups and had been around a while. And after every class, he'd have his steward's book, and I had my judge's book. And he'd say, "Okay, first was number 42. And I'd check mine. Second was number 39. And he checked every class verbally. It took 2 seconds to face each other and make sure we were matching numbers from every class. That way, at the end, we didn't have to go back and fix stuff.
Right.
It was brilliant. He was unbelievable. All I had to do was judge and write down the numbers. But he had everything else sorted out. And, it makes a difference. You know, it makes a difference.
There's no question. Let's face it, they're on a learning curve, too, when they're starting out. So.
Of course. And they're always the most helpful. I mean, they're trying so hard, you know, and they just, it takes time to learn. During COVID, when we had two entrances, during COVID, we're still in COVID, right?
Yeah. We're just kind of brushing it away, but it's still here.
It's right now. It is so bad.
I'm hearing about more cases now than I heard about when it first started. So. Yeah.
But it's not getting the media attention. So everyone's just tired. What are they called? COVID burnout. Everyone's just tired of doing anything about it. And they, Man, it's spreading. It's some shows.
Don't you find that happens with every big event, even in our world?
Yeah.
The media burnout. That, like someone saying, aren't you going to react to that? No, because in a couple of days, it will be gone. They'll find something else to have on baseball.
We had, at the AKC, we had Roger Ailes, Ailes Communications, on retainer. And he's a, Roger has passed away, but he was the president of Fox, and he was the president of Ailes Communications, and he ran George Bush's campaign and a million other things. The guy was a mogul. And we had a thing happen at the AKC, and I called Rob, I called him and said, you know, what do I do? And he said, in this case, don't answer the phones. And anybody that needs to, if they ask for anybody in particular, they're on vacation. I said, what do you mean? He goes, it's Thursday. By the weekend, it'll die out. If you answer and respond, you're fueling the fire. They're going to go back and forth. It's going to be a bigger story. Let it die out. And that was in the 90s.
It holds true today, because I've always felt someone will call me and they'll be all upset about something happening on Facebook and ask my advice. And that's exactly what I tell them.
Yeah. Let it die.
Yeah.
There's going to be 10 billion messages the next 2 minutes.
Right. If you open up that box, you know, they'll love it. They give them another week of drama if you open that box up.
So fuel for the fire. Fuel for the fire. Well, anyway, when we had the two entrance system during the beginning of COVID, or whatever you want to call it, the steward was at one entrance and the judge was at the other. And you had to yell. If you had a big ring, you're like, hey, 17. Yeah, I got over it. And it was tough.
Send it down.
It was tough. And you wanted so bad. Just walk down there with your book and go, okay, let's get this. Couldn't do it. And that was tough. It didn't make it any easier, but yeah, I think we tip of the hat to the stewards who are out there volunteering and working so hard for us. And we understand. And really, if you have one that's inexperienced, you've got a steward too. You've got a judge and steward. And that's just the way it is. You can ask for a different one, but that's insulting to a new one, right? They've got to learn too.
I know. I remember being at a show, though. I won't say who it was or who the judge was, but they I could see the panic look on their face, and they called me over. I'm like, and this is down in America. I said, what's wrong? What's wrong? You gotta go to the table and get me a new steward.
Yeah.
I guess they're driving each other crazy, probably. Yeah.
Oh, it'll happen. And it's not
personality conflict sometimes.
Yeah. And again, it'll take your head out of that judging space. You know, when you're there is a rhythm to judging. There's definitely a rhythm to it. You're either in that rhythm or you're not. And when you're not, you make mistakes. Not in the book. Well, maybe in the book. But you make mistakes with your selections because you're so hung up on, it's in the back of your head. Did I mark that? Oh, next I got this. Was that the winner's dog? Was that the, oh, okay. And then now we've got 7,000 awards after Best of Breed, right? Don't forget those. Select dog, select bitch. Oh, wait a second. Best of office, best. Owner handler. Who's owner handler? Raise your hand if you're an owner. You have to stop and say, who's an owner handler? Raise your hand. I mean, you had a little asterisk in your book. But that's not quite it, because you don't know who you beat, or unless you sit there and study it for a minute. Yeah. And then there's three of them. Then once my first assignment back, I had someone come back in the ring and say, you know, I was an owner handler. And I'm like, well, you didn't win anything. And well, I said, you got beat by another dog in your class. And you know, well, can I be the best?
Process of elimination. That's all I just tell them.
Well, no, you got beat. But it can be. No one knew in the beginning. You know, one knew.
The first thing I struggled with on the weekend, and this should have been my click, but as I was doing my first Best of Breed, I was thinking, Best of Breed, Best of Winners, Best of Sex, or Best of Breed, Best of Sex, Best of Winners? In Canada, it's Best of Breed, Best of Sex, Best of Winners.
As it should be. As it should be.
Oh, wait a second.
Yeah, I don't understand why we do it that way down here. Why would Best of Winners go in front of Best of Opposite? They haven't beaten them. I don't understand. It makes zero sense to me. Zero. Just change it. But I had, there's always an instance where those things are going to be a factor and you just can't let it be. So I don't know.
Then I look towards the sign, because sometimes the signs are Best of Breed in order. Oh, it was for second, third, and fourth. Like, God damn it.
Right.
That's been helping me.
Exactly. Well, I can tell you, this will really confuse you when you do the puppy groups down here. And by the way, some of these puppy groups can be big.
Yeah.
Not all of them. Some can have two dogs in it or none. But some of them, you'll get 15 of them in there, especially in sporting and working. And When you're applying for new breeds, you keep every piece of paper you possibly can keep so that when you apply, you can turn all the stuff in. And if you judge a puppy group, that's worth a tick off the CEU box, right? So you want to record all that. Well, I was judging a pretty large group, puppy group, and I did what Will should have done. I took my book out to Miller and checked them all in. Because I want that copy that shows me who I placed. Because I want to know who's in that group and who was absent. If it's absent, I cross it out and put an A. And I was all finished. I just thought that was the thing you do. And the rep watched and came out and said, what were you doing checking everybody in? I'm like, well, don't you have to? No, not for puppy groups. You don't have to. And I said, well, how, when I turn my sheet in, if I don't mark the absentees, I can make believe the Siberian was there and get a point for that. Oh, well, you don't have to check them in. So I found it curious because I want to do it legitimately. I don't want to make a mistake and say the Siberian was entered and I get a point if it didn't show up. But yeah, I don't know.
Wait, you might give it the group.
Exactly. Yeah.
But,
and I can, you know, I may have told the story before and I won't get into the details, but when I was working for Bob and Jane, and these things didn't happen once in a lifetime, they happened. A client had two min pins. Janie showed one. I showed one. I won. Infuriated her. It never happened. Never. And I wasn't even trying. I think the judges wanted to beat her. And when it was group time, Janie went, you know, took the winner in. So she thought, and won the group, and it was not the one that I showed and won the breed with. It was the one that she showed and didn't win the breed. Whoever brought it up, and I know who it was, I know who you are, brought up the wrong one. So yeah, it was, these things happen. And back then there's no computer. So, you know, you just change the number and it's all good. But yeah, these things happen. It can be, sure. Anyway, well, I'm glad you had a good time up there. Good dogs?
I had a great time. The entry was excellent. I had some really deep breeds. I really enjoyed myself.
So. Now, what about some low entry breeds? Did you have any?
Had a couple. There were a couple that you wouldn't expect, like my three setters. I had like six or seven, which I guess is.
Setters don't draw all the time these days.
I had some nice ones though. I had some pretty good quality. Yeah. It was nice to find.
I had to wait to send my application for the next breeds or for something, because I judged three shows that had Gordon Setters enter, but it was only one and you need competition. And Gordon's,
I had like six Gordon Setters. It was nice to see.
Sometimes you'll have 30 and sometimes you'll have one. You can't, it's depending on where you are in the country and if there's breeders in that area that have them to get there. And in this case, you know,
my biggest entry was duck tollers. Back when I was a kid, that was the low entry. The one that was won.
You just pushed the button, Will. You just pushed the button. You didn't even know it. All right. Here's my rant for the week. It's not right. A rant. I did a lot. People write articles in 15 minutes and mail them in and whatever. I take days because research is important to me and facts are important to me. And sometimes I'm almost done and I think of one thing and I'm like, I better check that. And I have to change my entire article, which happened this week, which will be in the next issue, I guess. If you've probably noticed that 20 years ago, if someone said, hey, Will, what's that? What breed is that? You didn't even have to think, bam, right? And now we have people say, what's that? And you have to go, because we have new breeds. And it seems like it's an accelerated pace of acceptance. So I got out my computer and my notepad and my pen. And I didn't make a spreadsheet this time. I didn't get too overboard. I just wrote it down.
You didn't know spreadsheet, different colors, no, shades.
Not this time. Not this time. No. Yeah. But from 1960 to, I'm going in 20-year segments. Okay, 20-year segments. 1960 to 1980, they accepted 9 new breeds. That's 20 years, 9 breeds. The next 20 years, 81 to 2001, 19 new breeds. From 2000 2022 to 2022. So these are 9, 12. How many do you think in the last 20 years?
20.
52. 52 new breeds in the last 20 years.
That's amazing. That's what I'm talking about. We all do those things. We just don't write it down. So.
No one even gets. And here's the thing. How many of you, how many of those do you think were low entry breeds? Out of 52, how many do you think were low entry breeds?
Half.
All but three. 49 low entry breeds. How is that? I am not, I have zero problem with all the new breeds. I love you all equally. But what a change of direction, huh?
Yeah.
From 9 to, you know, 8 to 19 to 20, you know, and all of a sudden 52, 49 low entry breeds. And when you said tollers, it sparked it for me because they're one of the only ones in the last 20 years that came in that aren't a low entry breed. So, but and here's the problem with that. It's, like I said, I'm all for it, right? That's wonderful. We now have 200 breeds, as you know, with the Bronco coming in. We hit the milestone 200th breed, which is what sparked the article in the first place. 110 of those 200 breeds are low entry breeds. We just brought in 49 more low entry breeds. There are 80 breeds between FSS and miscellaneous in the pipeline for recognition. 80 new ones.
Now, 80 more.
Yes. Now, with that said, when you're an FSS, that is not a guarantee that you'll be accepted as a breed. But the AKC keeps the found, it's called Foundation Stock Service, and they keep the records and the pedigrees for those dogs. The problem with having more than half of the breeds is low entry breeds, these people are dedicated to these breeds. They've gone to different countries and got a bunch of people together and got this breed on the map in the States. But all you need is 150 to 200. It says minimum of 150-200 in the country to get into FSS. 150 to 200. That's like two dogs in every state.
Right.
Is that a breed that's worth supporting yet? I don't know. Maybe it is. Maybe it is. Maybe the theory is you get them in and hopefully they build numbers by the time they get into full recognition. But the only problem, and I, like I said, these people are super dedicated. They work so hard. It's a big deal to get these things together. But when they're doing that, they're pouring their hearts into it. And the result is that judges and breeders don't get a chance to see them. If you don't get a chance to see them, you don't get a chance to learn about them. If you don't, there are, there's a possibility of all 200 breeds, possibility of all 200 breeds being entered at Westminster, Morris and Essex, and the AKC Invitational or National, whatever it's called. Those three shows have a possibility of drawing 200. I don't think they always do, but there's plenty of shows that don't even have 100 of the breeds enter. Half of the AKC recognized breeds. And again, this is not, I'm not casting dispersions at these breeds. I love some of these breeds. I mean, some of these breeds I'd like to own. But how does it work for judges? You go to one seminar and you hope that person's not just pimping the dog that they brought over that no one knows if it's a good one. They're saying, this is the good one. You know, this is what you need to. How would you know when you don't get to see 20, 30 at sitting ringside or judge them and get to see the differences between these dogs and draw your own conclusions? When you can't see a big entry, when you can't see. So you say, go to the nationals. Okay, I'll go to 52 nationals. Is that going to happen? No, it's not feasible. And in 2018, Carmen Battaglia did a superior article on some data that he was recording on dogs entered. 17 breeds did not even have a national. That's how low the entry breeds are, right? 17 didn't even have one, and 8 of them didn't have 20 at 19 or less entered. So it's hard to get an eye for these dogs. It's hard to for judges who are judging every weekend and then something walks in and they're like, oh yeah, low entry breed. I hope that every low entry breed that I have, that I judge, I hope that I'm, and I make it a point to try to put as much time into those or more than any breed because they deserve it. But when you have 200 breeds and you're an all-breed judge and 110 of those breeds are low-entry breeds and you're going through them every day, what's going on? How are we learning these things? You know, these breeds getting the respect they deserve. I don't know.
And then there's no real answer to it because...
No, well, there is.
Don't.
Fewer shows. Fewer shows.
Right.
Or they have to come.
But like as a judge here, if you're asking me to, you know, judge, you know, the Rice Krispie Square Dog, I don't get to see them. What's the answer? What's the answer? Right. I can Google all I want and look at pictures and read articles.
And then when you get into the group ring, it's even worse, right? Because in the breed ring, you can pair one or the other. And if one sounder makes a good shape going around or something, you know, that can win. And then you get in the group ring, and then you have the opportunity for some judges to go, well, Discovery Channel. And I'm going to use the Rice Krispie Square Dog to show that I'm cool. Or maybe they do really know about that breed. It's just not right. And
but we had, like, I don't know if you remember the judge in Canada, Miller. He was actually president of the CKC, Ed Dixon.
Yeah, I know Ed. I can tell you some Ed Dixon stories.
I'm sure.
He gave my first major when I was a kid.
Oh, I'm sure he did.
Mm-hmm. Yes, he did.
He gave a lot of kids their first.
Yes, he did. And someday I'll tell you how it really happened. But
he was known for giving these low entry breeds.
Yes.
Best in shows.
Yeah.
He was not. Like, I remember when I was a kid, there was a very famous, you know, Ed made him famous, a black and tan coonhound. And in Canada, there'd be like one black and tan coonhound. And it showed up, and lo and behold, it'll go best in show. And he was known for doing that. He wanted to be the first one to give certain breeds best in shows.
What a character! What a great character he was.
He was an interesting dog
judge too. Yeah,
he was really smart. It was just a side of him that liked to appease part of viewership, I suppose.
Right.
But, yeah, and I can't claim he was very instrumental in when I was younger. In talking me up. You know?
Yeah, I'll bet he was.
But you know, he gave Brian Still his very first best in show.
Is that right?
Yeah, on a Bouvier.
Wow, cool. And
evil.
Yeah. Evil.
Remember him telling me about I saw the picture. A couple times ago, I saw Bri. Yeah, I was going through pictures, and then there's Ed Dixon and the Evil going best in show.
Hey, there was a rumor going about that Brian wasn't doing well. He is doing well, and we hope him the best in his recovery. Such a good guy. Anyway, the other question that this begs is, I'm looking at the FSS rules, and they want the breed to be around for 40 years, somewhere in the world.
Somewhere
in the world, 40 years. Now, is that the magic number? What's a purebred dog, Will?
Yeah, is there such a thing?
Is there? I don't think there is such a thing.
Yeah, really?
We're pure or bred, maybe, but because they're all crosses. Every breed we have is crosses. So it's not a matter. I can guarantee you the next breed they accept is going to be crosses. The question is when. It's not a matter if. They're all crossbreds. Matter is when. So
how long have Golden Doodles been around?
Well, but they don't breed them to each other. They're F1s every time. So they're not a breed. Not even close to being a breed. We're not talking about crosses. These guys didn't breed pointers to foxhounds every day. They threw one in and then went right back into pointers. And the greatest example is Dr. Scheibel, Bob Scheibel. I hope I'm not mispronouncing his name. He's passed. Who's a Dalmatian, real serious enthusiast. And high uric acid was a real serious issue in Dalmatians. He decided, and he got the grace of the AKC. He didn't just do it on his own. He went to the AKC and presented his program, and they allowed it to happen. And he bred to a pointer bitch once. And then right back to Dalmatians. So it was a simple recessive. He fixed it. Done. He created low uric acid Dalmatians. And the AKC accepted them and then didn't. So they never got recognized for 30 years. 30 years.
Yeah. I gave one the group.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. So is it 40 years or 30 years? Next topic. Dr. Katnack in England, brilliant guy, geneticist, serious canine geneticist, bred boxers, and he wanted a bobtail, you know, a naturally docked boxer, because in the UK, they were passing laws about you can't dock anymore. We didn't want to break the law, but he didn't want to see tails. So he bred to a corgi. How smart is this guy to get this, a corgi to a boxer? Heads, everything. He said he wanted erect ears, he wanted the same color, and he wanted no tail. And four generations later, now he had it fixed in two or three. It's all it takes. The fourth generation, so how many years was that? Six, eight, I don't know. Fourth generation, the KC, the Kennel Club, London, registers dogs. And they're now naturally docked boxers all over the world. So is it 40 years, 30 years, or four generations? You know, is it 8 years, 30 years, four? I don't know what it is until a dog is purebred.
Right.
I can tell you that if it's too soon, I get sick to my stomach. I cringe. I hate it. But can every case be the same? Here's a serious geneticist, not just some guy who knows what he's doing. He knew what to do, and he got it done. He's the first one to tell you about all the problems. And he says the faults in the show ring on the fifth and sixth generation weren't because the corgi crossed, it was because the boxers weren't very good. These are experiments that took place with the guidance of a kennel club. Do we do that anymore?
Dr. Moreau. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah. Do we do that anymore? Oh, if you mention a cross to a breed club, they will go ballistic. Like that one dog is going to change the breed forever and they're all going to be mutts. So is the definition of a purebred dog, did they breed true, right? That's essential, right? Did they breed true and they keep the breed characteristics and look? They've got to look alike and have the breed character. You don't want to change breed temperament character either, right? So if that's the definition of a purebred dog, they breed true and they all have the same sort of character and temperament and look, how many generations does that take? Evidently four, if you're Dr. Katnack. 30 years if you're Dr. Scheibel, and 40 if you want to go in the FSS. I don't know the answer, but I'm fascinated by the equation.
That gives me an idea, Wayne. We should come up with the Dog Show Drive dog, our own breed.
That's right. Yeah. The DSD.
Yeah.
The DSD setter. Hey, you want to now... I am within 200 feet of the president of the Golden Retriever Club of America right now. And if he heard me, I better shut the window, say this, he'd probably burn my coach down. And I would too if I meant it, but I do not mean it. But wouldn't miniature Golden Retrievers be pretty cool to have?
Oh, I'm sure. Everybody's Christmas list, that's for sure.
By the way, I bet they already exist somewhere.
Oh, I'm sure they do. I'll
bet they do.
If they don't, someone's calling something that just because.
Yeah, exactly. And they'd have to have...
Well, what is it? Can't you tell us? A miniature golden retriever.
And they could retrieve miniature birds. But hey, we've got the... what do we call them now? American Shepherd?
The American miniature...
Yeah. It used to be the Australian Shepherd, and then they called it mini... Australian Shepherds.
Yeah, mini American Shepherd.
Yeah, and then the Australian Club said, no, we can't have that. Well,
aren't they basically the same breeding?
I don't want to go there, but
I guess not. I mean, we better not. Strike that.
Yeah, strike that. But I do remember.
I'm already in trouble. So.
And back when I worked the AKC in 1900s, this woman came in with a tremendous, she just came in to visit someone in the Gazette. Liz Bodner, I think she came to visit a vet. And she's from New York. She just walked over and she happened to have a miniature Australian Shepherd. It was pretty damn cute. And I remember her saying, oh, we'll never get, you know, we just have these. She's a horse person. We just have these around the barn because they're just fun and we like, you know. And I said, well, how'd you create them? I don't know. Just buy them from the horse people, you know. Well, all of a sudden it's a breed. So was it 40 years ago, 30 years ago, or four generations ago? I don't know. I'm glad they're here. You know, they do well in the ring. And but how's that work? And now I'm sure someone's going to say, no, they've been around for 100 years in Botswana or Uzbekistan. And we should prove that by some, you know, some cool old crispy paper that we found Yellowstone that some
in the background, you see a dog. Right. Look at that dog. Right.
And there are plenty, and I have no problem with these, but there's plenty of these 52 new, the new 52 breeds that some would argue look like a cross that occurred maybe 41 years ago, I guess. I don't know. I don't know how we got there. But
for 100 years in Canada, we would get judging schedules or premium lists, and they always listed the breed and what the judge was, if the judge was judging. There was always a breed called the Talton Bear Dog. Hmm. And we were all like, we never seen a Talton Bear Dog. We don't know what a Talton Bear. And apparently it was a breed. Apparently still is a breed in Northern Canada. And the Inuits used it for hunting as a little miniature type husky breed with a tail right flat in its back. And all I ever had in my head was a drawing of this dog. Yeah. But it was in every premium list, every judging schedule.
Isn't that something?
And I never saw one. And then it's there was talk that there was some up north somewhere, you know, that they had seen some of it. And it was always that grainy picture like you were talking.
Yeah.
But Talton Bear Dog.
Somebody in that club had influence. And I hate to say it, but yes, there's rules for, well, I'm gonna say every registry in the world, there's rules for what gets in. But sometimes if someone objects that's well placed in another breed, they can slow that process down. I don't know. It's an interesting topic. I don't know the answers. Like I said, I have no. I'm not casting dispersions on anybody's breed. Well, I love them
just
all.
Just bring the data forward and let the world make the decision.
Does the population number need to be changed? Right, more than 150 to 200. Does the population number need to be changed, or how do we get more? How do we get more examples to judges to see them? Because I can tell you, Silk and Windhounds, and I mentioned this before, qualify in every which way to Sunday, except I don't think they're quite at 40 years yet. But they've been DNA'd and registered for 30. You know, they all look alike. They breed true. There's hundreds and hundreds of them at every Silken show. They're not going to bring six. They're going to bring a lot. And they're all
even up here. Even up here, our UKC show and ABI shows. Yeah. There's always an entry of Silkens.
They're a great breed, but I'm guessing the Borzoi people would object. But they would bring a bigger entry and maybe even a more similar looking unified entry than some of our low entry breeds. So I don't know how
questions. There's no question. Yeah. I've judged them twice now, I think, in my life. And they conform.
They're beautiful.
They're a breed.
And their temperaments are extraordinary. I mean, we thought about getting one. In fact, and I didn't put this here on purpose, Will.
Silken Windhound Nash.
Poster on Silken Windhound.
That is beautiful.
Nash. Isn't it gorgeous?
Yeah,
this is drawn gorgeous. By Joyce Chin, who is I don't want to say she's the president, but I think she is. She's been a very active participant in this breed. I think she's the president of Silken Windhound Club. She's also a brilliant artist, and she and her husband, Arthur Adams, are famous Marvel comic artists. And she's just fun, and she's great, and she has great dogs. And that's the kind of people. These are bright people with great creative talents, and they love this breed. And I'm going out to judge them this fall in California, and I know I'll get 150 of them.
Yeah.
And you might not even get that at the Pointer National. You know, you just, it's a real thing, but they don't meet the criteria. So, it's fascinating to me how that all works.
It is an interesting concept.
Well, I think the question is, it's a big deal about who did the cross and when and what two dogs they start from, right? The guy in England was a serious boxer breeder and an extremely popular canine geneticist. Four generations for him. if you and I decide to make a Rice Krispie square, and we get a couple of dogs together, we shouldn't get it in four generations, you know? So, and now also it depends on what, now you breed a Dalmatian to a pointer, doesn't take long to get that one sorted out. They're basically a similar, not size and shape. No. I mean, real basically, but it's not like breeding a boxer to a corgi is my,
right.
my point. I don't think it can be the same. You can have rules for all this stuff, but I don't think they work all the time. I think there needs to be some sort of committee that says, no, this one's different. These people did it differently. The dogs that they crossed originally 100 years ago or 50 years ago, whatever it might be, here's another thing. In the AKC rules, it says, in the FSS rules, it says that they disallow dogs that are a result of a crossbreeding. Ooh, well, then they all have to go. Now, I know what they mean. They mean doodles and stuff like that.
But it's a rule. But I think committees are the right way to go in almost every aspect.
I do too.
A committee of experienced people and
I do too.
From judging to approving breeds to everything. I think, let's face it, when a new dog comes into Canada, I was on a committee for the CKC that you would go and look at that dog and approve that it was a Doberman.
Oh, really? Yeah. Well, now any of the FS breeds can compete in all the performance events and the FFS shows. They're having that now. In fact, it says it's your catapult to participating in events. So it's interesting, and I don't know the answer. I know they got the right person in charge out there. Maribeth has something to do with it. But she's got rules she's got to go by. Whenever you start with a committee, people will scream politics. Guess what? There's politics with rules, too.
Oh, exactly.
There's politics with rules, too. But what a committee can do of sensible dog people and geneticists, Jim Edwards would have been perfect for this, bless us. Oh, I miss him every day. This is the kind of thing that a group of smart people can sit and look, hey, in this case, we see these things. There's a big population. We know that people know what they're doing. They bred true for so many generations or whatever. It maybe doesn't meet the 40-year criteria. Maybe it meets the 39-year criteria. Or maybe it meets the 10-year criteria with 20 generations. I don't know.
But the important term of that is case by case, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. And I'll bet some of these breeds, it would be interesting to see if a committee that didn't know got one of some of these low-entry breeds brought forward and they would say, they're not breeding true enough. There's not enough of them. And you know, back to square. Even though you ticked all the boxes and passed all the rules, maybe you're not ready.
That Rice Krispie Square looks more like a marshmallow than a Rice Krispie Square. And
that's Captain Crunch over there. That's what that is. That's as round as a Cheerio. Anyway, we got to wrap it up. Well, I've got place to go and things to do. And you've got a plane to catch.
I do. Not for a few hours, but I've got to wake my young man over there, Liam. He's still sleeping
over
there.
Good luck with that.
Yeah. Exactly. He was up. He was still up when I went to sleep. I know that.
So. Well, with lines at airport these days, you might want to get there on time.
Yeah, we will.
Anyway, great talking to you, Will. I hope you have a safe trip back, and great to see you and the boys having a good time out there in BC. So, we'll see you soon, bud.
We will. All right.
Great. Until the next time.
Yeah, on the Dog Show Drive. Stay safe, everybody.
Party on, Bert.
No way.
Better be paying attention, Doc.
Give me grace. Bury my sins.
Shattered glass. Ernie, can you use this in the blooper reel?
That's right.
We love you, Ernie. From where I need to go.
Don't put that in, Ernie.
Quit taking yourself so damn seriously.
Watch the move under my feet. Stranger things
have
come and gone. To see the world and take the throne. Don't hold
thanks,
back.
Thanks, Ernie.
Oh, we didn't mention hockey either.
Hold back.
Isn't that unbelievable, though? Put that in, Doc.
Man, I want to see it on a blooper anywhere.